Hello, I'm Paul Check, and welcome to Seraphiel, the explanation of my cover art for the audio program The Absolute Essentials of Rumi, Volume 1, which is available to you at ppssuccess.com in the Products and Services section under Audios. I suspect that some of you who are interested in Rumi's poetic teachings are, as yet, possibly unfamiliar with the absolute essentials of his living philosophy. The word philosophy, as used here, does not imply theoretical dialogue. Indeed, I use it here in its authentic form. Philos Sophia means love of wisdom. But what is wisdom? What was wisdom to Rumi? It is my dream that by listening to this audio exploration of the cover art I drew to express the embodiment of Rumi's living philosophy, that you will be more capable of enjoying the depth of conversation in my recording The Absolute Essentials of Rumi, Volume 1 and successive volumes. So then, what is wisdom? Wisdom is the product of experience. Experience implies participation in life. Though wisdom comes in a myriad of forms, including theoretical wisdom, which can only produce wisdom of theories, wisdom as it applies to Rumi's teachings is highly pragmatic, practical, down in the dirt, living wisdom. Rumi's lineage was composed of a line of wise men. A wise man is one who lives, breathes, and acts from the seed of wisdom. They are an accompaniment of the wisest souls among us. Wise men, a term that is inclusive of either sex, are people who have become wise primarily by being pioneers in life. They are people that have fully lived, and typically have fully lived far beyond social convention. In any system of life, be it nature, warfare, cultivation, medicine, social sciences, religious practice, or otherwise, the wise men will study the inner workings of any system and then use their wisdom to improve it. This, my friends, is Rumi's gift to us all. Rumi is the synthesis, the very essence of the wisdom of the wise, in my experience. Because Rumi emerged from a long line of theologians, educators, leaders in government, his wisdom is not only of that of the land, it is truly of God. So now let's explore how I've exemplified Rumi in my cover art titled Seraphiel. Seraphiel? In this Rumi series, one of the sources I borrow from is Rumi, Poet and Mystic, 1207 through 1273, by Reynold A. Nicholson. Of the poems my soul suggested for this first edition was one titled Asleep to the World, in which Rumi says, at daybreak, like Seraphiel, he bids them return from yonder to the world of form. The disembodied spirits he confines anew and causes each body to be laden with its good and evil works. This verse of Asleep in the World embodies Rumi's living philosophy, which was simply that love is God. To help you better understand and comprehend Rumi, I will now explore each of the key metaphysical symbols in my cover art, beginning with Seraphiel. In Jewish, Christian, and Islamic literature, a seraphim is a celestial being with two or three pairs of wings, who guards the throne of God. In Christian angelology, which means hierarchy of angels, seraphim are the highest ranking in the hierarchy. In art, they are painted red, symbolizing fire. They appear in the Old Testament in a vision of Isaiah as six-winged creatures praising God. They are synonymous with the cherub in Christian angelology. To share my vision as it appears here in honor of Rumi's influence on my life and my way of seeing and knowing God is unconditional love. I will use Rumi's own words. Rumi says, "At daybreak, like Sir Raphael, he bids them return from yonder to the world of form." When Rumi says, "At daybreak, like Sir Raphael," he means that God, as that very being of light which rules the kingdom of higher self or soul self, within which is contained the ego self or the lower self. When we reach full illumination, when we become unconditionally loving, we reach the point of becoming Sir Raphael. Sir Raphael is indeed oneness. The seraphim then represents both the guardian of and the world soul itself, within which the seraphim, Sir Raphael, is both mother and father of all creation, while God is her source and substance as a being of light. Sir Raphael has multiple symbolic meanings, mystical meanings, in that they are found at the root of any legitimate path of self-realization. Let's look at some of the symbolic viewpoints of Rumi's use of Sir Raphael here as a means of better coming to know him. First, the seraphim or Sir Raphael is a being of light. Here, to understand Rumi, we need some metaphysical underpinning to begin to comprehend him, and more importantly, to avoid trying to stuff Rumi into any contentious, orthodox box. In metaphysics, the term light is synonymous with knowing and or knowledge. The metaphysical word that describes this knowing of light is gnosis, which means knowing or to know. But true knowing can only come through experience, because the principle of light, movement, time, and matter are all aspects of existence without which God could not know God. The mention of Sir Raphael as the being of light who bids them return from yonder means that Sir Raphael is God as creation, as existence. The only thing beyond Sir Raphael is that which is other than existence, other than the knowable that can only be God as absolute, great spirit beyond spirits, spirit with no name, no face, no form, unspeakable, indescribable, unknowable as anything. Therefore, God is saying that God calls God to return from yonder to the world of form. Sir Raphael then represents God in and as form, existence. The seraphim calls all sleeping, not yet self-realized, self with capital letters, souls from yonder or dream world into the world of form. Sir Raphael is God, waking God from God's sleeping state, which is represented in and as all sentient beings, or gods with a little g, co-creators in and of Maya, God's dream, or in more purely Eastern terms, God's illusion. Next, we can look at Serafiel from the perspective of Einstein's formula, E equals mc squared. Einstein's famous equation essentially means that the physical, electromagnetic, vibrational reality of God is expressed as light. Therefore, Serafiel, being the highest ranking angel overseeing the throne of God or existence, represents life itself. Our third way of looking at Serafiel may be exemplified in the term Tai Chi. The Chinese term Tai Chi essentially means with Qi, or with life, or in Rumi's way of expression, with love. Tai Chi is an integration of the male force, yang, light, heat, expansion, awareness, with the female force of yin, dark, cold, moist, contractive, inclusive, absorbing, or drawing into itself. Because Serafiel is the guardian of God's throne, Serafiel must be endogenous and therefore capable of virgin birth. Less her feminine aspects, Serafiel would have nothing to create of or from, no soil or ground substance, so to speak. The yin of Serafiel is the dark of God, the divine sea in which he brings light or enlightenment to God through the principle of fire, light, movement, and time, all of which are representative of the action pole or living God. The yin or she of Serafiel is the womb, and the egg creates fecundity, abundance, new growth, offspring, something. Our fourth definition, Serafiel represents unconditional love. And in a sense, I mean represents like a lawyer represents a criminal or an individual. Although Serafiel is certainly not representing a criminal, she is representing unconditional love. I say she is representing unconditional love because Serafiel could not be Serafiel if indeed Serafiel was totally unconditional love, for Serafiel is. And therefore, Serafiel represents the final destiny of condition, the point at which wholeness reaches peak consciousness of itself before completely dissolving into the absolute of God. So Serafiel represents unconditional love as the guardian of the throne of God, as the throne represents the realm of conditions or existence. One may think of God's throne is the tree of life itself. Serafiel then is your universal heart as ensouled being. To be any form of sentient being means to be in form. Without form, you could not be sentient of. Self cannot know self without other. Subject can only know or comprehend object relatively. Here when Rumi says, the disembodied spirits he confines anew and causes each body to be laden with its good and evil works, he is actually using what we would call orthodox language to express the truth of God. Let's look deeper than the word, which is essentially sum and substance of the orthodox view, and see if we can pan for gold in Rumi here. When Rumi says, the disembodied spirits he confines anew. The orthodox perception is one in which disembodied spirits is likely to be assumed to mean beings or people. If that were the case, it is more likely that Rumi would have stated disembodied souls, for souls are beings, sentient, each in its own unique way, be that the way of an insect, plant, animal, man, or otherwise. Spirit, in the metaphysical sense of the word, may also be interpreted as energy. If God is absolute, all, with capital letters, which are essential requirements for a God to be a God in capital letters, then God can only have one quality, which is oneness or wholeness as God. That means no needs or desires, sufficient unto self in capital letters. God is sufficient unto self. God as God can have no needs, wants, or desires. God, therefore, can only be absolutely empty, no border, no barriers, no boundary, no definition, and, at the same time, absolutely full, absolutely eternally full of God's self. God, then, is an eternal process of nothing becoming something and something becoming nothing. That, my friends, is what spirit means. Spirit is the very energy liberated when the nothing of God becomes something, as in the birth of, and when something is born as it is in form, it immediately begins to die. All things created radiate. Radiation is a byproduct of transformation. Birth, paradoxically, marks the beginning of life, which is none other than a transformational process that culminates in a so-called death, or release from form. When Rumi says of Serafael, he bids them return from yonder to the world of form, he, be it the translator, capitalizes yonder, which implies all yonder, the world of the boundless, the formless, God as no thing. In my cover art, that yonder is depicted as the empty space in the intersection of the Holy Cross. The circle of fire around the emptiness represents the universe, which is often referred to in metaphysics as the world or world soul, which means soul of the universe. That section of my diagram would be the equivalent of capital T, capital E, pronounced da in Chinese cosmology, which means universe or existence. Da is the product of Tai Chi, or the dance of the female and the male forces of God, or the unknowable Tao. Yet, Tai Chi, the essential spirit of creation, also has its shadow, which is Wu Qi, which essentially means without or not Qi, not existence. Existence, then, is God's absolute fullness, while non-existence is God's absolute emptiness. Therefore, God is here represented as the empty circle, Wu Qi, around which Serafael's creation, the form of forms, emerges from, in, and as Tai Chi, as Da, creation, the universe. The very process of life, as Rumi taught, was one in which the sleeping God, consciousness itself, progressively awakens to its true self, in capital letters. This can only happen as experience in time. Here I represent time harmoniously with archaic descriptions regarding the symbology of the Holy Cross, which is such that it is represented by the horizontal beam of the cross when depicted in linear sequence, beginning, middle, end. The experience of life and death occurs in time. Yet, like most mystics, Rumi's life was one of letting go. Letting go of time and all that bound him to awareness as something or someone. For Rumi knew full well that all such time-based experiences of the beloved were incomplete. For in God there can be no subject-object relationship, for that implies self and other. Rumi's quest and offering, depicted in his now famous verse, "Beyond judgment, there's a field, I'll meet you there," was to gain full union with God, to become complete again, to be one with all, Tao. That place is here represented in my diagram as the vertical beam of the Holy Cross. Here, past, present, and future are one. They are represented in the vertical beam because essentially past, present, and future are stacked on top of each other. The past, that which is below the horizontal beam, the present, the empty circle in the middle at the intersection of the vertical and horizontal beam. And that above could be seen as the past, yet they are stacked on top of each other vertically. This linear expression of past, present, and future can be more easily comprehended with a little mental exercise. Take a piece of string, make it, say, 6 inches long, label the left end of it the past, the middle of it the present, the right end of it the future. Glue the two ends of it together seamlessly, and you have what is expressed by the vertical dimension of the Christian cross. There is no beginning and no end to a true circle. Thus, there is no beginning and no end to God's creation. In that state of the eternal now, you have lived all your lives, yet live none. You are all things, yet you are none. You are consciousness, yet not conscious of, which can only occur in creation, in time, on the horizontal beam. The story of life as taught by Rumi and all the mystics I've studied is depicted as the man being crucified on the cross. That man represents the Adam Kadmon, or the original soul of man, the archetype of man. Yet for a soul to be knowable as the soul of a cat, a dog, or of you, there must also be an ego, a sense of border, barrier, or definition. In short, a form. That form represents identity as something, which when coupled with a soul means that that something is aware of itself. Awareness being unique to each soul or ego soul or sentient being. The awareness of a cat is that of a cat. The awareness of a bug is that of a bug. And the awareness of a man is that of a man. The man on the cross is the representation of the process all human beings naturally go through until they reach enlightenment. The enlightened ones may choose then to take form and help God become God. Yet, that process, becoming God, comes complete with a starch reality. One can only experience life through sentience, consciousness of something happening, all of which require movement in which the experience unfolds, which also then includes space and time. To become God, to have union with his beloved, as Rumi so deeply longs for comes at the price of absolute self or ego soul annihilation. No memory, no knowledge of anything whatsoever, no family, no friends, no loved ones. Now, if your life has been the absolute shits, and it was as easy as just committing suicide and walking around for a while waiting for a new bodysuit to play another round, I assume you people would be ceaselessly offing themselves. But as any true metaphysician knows, suicide is just hitting the pause button and taking another ride on the merry-go-round, the wheel, that Buddha referred to as samsara. Rumi's truth, as I experience it, is as follows. One, life is beautiful, and the more fully it is lived, the more beautiful it is. Two, once you've lived enough lives in consciousness of separation from that which you truly are, your desire changes such that you want union with divine beauty each step of the way. A paradox emerges. Life and its meaning become more full, more complete, more beautiful. You see God everywhere. Then you are as love-struck, and like a flaming, passionate lover desires to merge with the other. You find yourself perplexed and in pain. For to show the extent of your love of God will surely result in actions towards self and other that will be interpreted as insanity by the so-called sane of society. So, God becomes limited as a lover in form. To get closer to God, so to speak, you have to commit heresy in the orthodox sense, if you understand Rumi and the mystics at large. You have to love yourself enough to fully share the experience of God as something more than you, with you. That's worth meditating on. Only when your own ego feels so loved, so safe, so to speak, that it will stop defending itself, creating barriers in relationships, will it willingly merge with Allah, the one God. But there's more. More you already know for sure. But maybe I can remind you. That place Rumi was so willing to arrive at, that place that requires absolute annihilation of the ego self to get to, is the yonder of the world of form. And when Seraphael bids them to return from yonder to the vertical beam of pure consciousness and the dismembered spirits, he, Seraphael, or God as Seraphael, confines anew and causes each body to be laden with its good and evil works, are none other than the spirits of God, which ceaselessly, eternally jump willing out of the divine ocean, just as evaporation and waves constantly emit drops of our physical ocean. But, and here's the juicy part, the drop does not choose which body or form Seraphael will confine it in anew. You could wake up for the gazillionth time as a rock, a star, a planet, a gas cloud, an atom, a cockroach, a beagle, an eagle, an idiot, a president, Madonna, a flower, a microorganism. Joining God is gambling what you have for what you are. That gamble, my friends, is life itself. If you are here right now, the truth is that some or all of Rumi is in you. In my drawing, the Adam Kadmon, the archetypical man, is not only being crucified, he is wearing a crown, for he is crowned King, Christ, Krishna, Buddha, no mind, Brahma, God, God can only become truly aware of godliness as the ego soul itself learns to love without condition. To do that, to be a Christ, a true mystic, requires that out of your very love for the truth of yourself, the rest of yourself, you must let go of any distinction and become totally at one with all. At that point, you are no more a being of light, no longer part of the throne of God over which Seraphiel resides, but you are conscious as Seraphiel. Only God can call God back into form. My understanding of Rumi is that he was clearly ready to gamble his awareness of anything, memory of or otherwise, for even one moment in union with his beloved. So here we are with Seraphiel to guide you into Rumi, into your capital S, capital E, capital L, capital F, self-conscious, and out of yourself, your ego consciousness. You will see the divine feminine of her crying, for she feels the pain of her children's self-realization. But her tears are, as Rumi would say, pearls, not tears. For Seraphiel knows that the glory always supersedes the pain of birth, as every mother knows. The masculine of him looks onward at the ego soul with concern for those who've gotten lost in the game of life, whilst having forgotten that the game is of their own creation. Here, Seraphiel channels mystic guidance to all who are open. Rumi is all that. Well, thank you. I'm Paul Check, and I hope you've enjoyed exploring Rumi through my cover art. Feel free to dive into Rumi with me by ordering The Absolute Essentials of Rumi at www.pbssuccess.com in the Products and Services section. While you're there, you may also enjoy my Absolute Essentials of Osho program and the many other book, e-book, audio, DVD, and all sorts of cool stuff that I've left there for you to explore. Thank you. It's been my great pleasure to share with you. I hope you are enjoying yourself in the divine creation, wherever you are. Bye-bye.